Radio Steers.
Hello. Hello, Mr. Taylor.
What do you want?
You're listening to Radio Stew on WGXC 90.7 FM Acra and 313.9 Transmission Arts, Experimental Sound Art, Radio Art, Transmission Art, Radio Theater, Free Jazz, Noise. You never know what you might hear on Radio Stew.
Please don't treat me like a mental patient.
Do you believe that?
Not for a second. Do you realize what this means?
Don't go quiet. That's the radio.
Thank you.
Radio Stews.
And suddenly... I want to be the machine in your hand.
Radio Stew, we're going to tune in the ghosts in the machine, the sounds in the ether, the noises from the nanotechnology, and other electronic sounds. We just heard about cell phone electromagnetic fields. And we're going to hear some disinformation from Joe Banks, author of Rorschach Audio, talking about the use of radio noise and electromagnetic interference. We'll hear excerpts of his art installation, too, from 2011. Radio noise. We'll also tune in Alan Lamb's recordings of Australian electrical wires. And hear 147 layers of Call Me Maybe, some of Scanner's early radio noise on this haunted radio show on Radio Stew.
Well, it was, I mean, I can sum it up now. But you might want to reread it, I don't know. Could you do that? And would you respond? Would you respond by talking or by writing?
I'll respond by writing.
All right then. Yeah. Yes. Well, and also you might find it easier to write as well, mightn't you? I mean, you're fine at waffling. When you say you're not good at it, that's not true. You do a sort of, yes you do, you're right. Skirt round your shoe. Well, that's alright, we all do that. As long as you talk, that's the most important thing. I have to come up now on either Tuesday or Thursday. I could still change it, but I think probably I'll leave it at Tuesday.
Nam June Paik is called the father of video art, and for the simple reason that he really understood the power and significance of television as a broadcast medium, but also that the television set itself, that it had the capacity, the electronic moving image, to become a new tool, a new expressive means for artistic exploration and creation.
Nam June Paik was like an antenna that was pointed out into the world, absorbing ideas and absorbing everything that was new, almost as if it were coming in from outer space. He prefigured the internet. He actually was the first person ever to use the term electronic superhighway in print in a proposal he did in 1974. So he had this gift for seeing into the future and understanding that things would be different from now on.
I'm standing before Electronic Superhighway, and this is really one of Nam June's fantastic, most celebrated pieces. It's an homage, if you will, to the United States. And it's an expression of how media essentially gives us our understanding of the world with its processed imagery drawn from key movies, television shows, news events. TV Garden is one of his most celebrated installations. It's really the heart of his exhibition. And it's a space filled with hundreds of plants and televisions scattered about the screens in different positions.
The second big video wall, it's called Megatron Matrix. I believe it's about the three different ways we absorb an identity.
He was really the first artist to deconstruct technology and give it back to us. Nam June Paik created a robot in 1995 that we titled Paikbot. Here is Paikbot right here. It's made out of old Bakelite radios, speakers, cylinder recorders, and televisions, as well as a closed-circuit camera. And he has a Twitter account. He tweets about his experience in the museum's collection and the archive. This was a perfect extension of Nam June Paik's philosophy.
Nam June Paik's relevance for the future is that he's, in part, an inspiration. I know for many younger artists who are now working in this media culture, they are looking for ways to push it, not simply to accept what something can do, but to make it do something it wasn't imagined to do.
We'll be right back. My name's Hari Kundru. On the lounge, we talk to a lot of people whose work is difficult to describe. And Joe Banks, who works as disinformation, certainly falls into that category. The best I've come up with is poet of noise. I mean, most of us spend our lives trying to banish noise from signal, tuning in the TV or trying to hear that pirate garage station over the static. But Joe does things the other way round. Where you and I just hear noise, Joe listens to atmospherics from lightning and storms, biostatics, pylons, power loops, military signals, pulses of navigation systems, solar radiation, the list goes on. As disinformation, he takes these phenomena and makes recordings and sound installations from them. Welcome to the lounge, Joe.
Hi.
OK, well, the obvious question is why?
I think probably the best way to describe my motive is that there's a sort of oversupply of experimental music and an undersupply of interesting sound art. There are far too many people sort of noodling about with bad music and sort of making funny noises for their own satisfaction or whatever.
But there's more than that to the noises you're hearing. I mean, part of the joy of it surely lies in their origins. I mean, suddenly decide to start listening to the atmosphere?
Well, pretty much for those kind of reasons, is to try and create some form of experimental music that's much more specialised and sort of refined than the kind of usual guff that's floating around at the moment, as a way of just making it more, having an interest in that kind of area, but trying to create something that's much more distinctive than what people who are interested in that sort of thing usually see.
So how much of this, manipulation do you do? Do you tend to sort of produce the sounds, transmit them directly as you hear them, or do you do a lot of this tweaking and tinkering with them?
Well, I try to do less tweaking and tinkering because I think, generally speaking, there's been a sort of tendency to over-manipulate unusual sounds in experimental music, or perhaps the sort of art side being a slightly different area.
But certainly we're all used to in kind of commercial techno music or whatever to hearing sound sources from all sorts of stuff that have been heavily treated.
Yeah. So. Well, I think people seem to respond to not treating material in that kind of way because the kind of effects that are generally used as treatments have become quite clichéd in themselves.
Right.
So it's quite refreshing to hear sounds that haven't been sort of processed to death, in a sense.
I suppose part of the fascination of this is that these sounds are part of our environment.
Yeah. I mean, I look at it as being, or like to look at it, or at least this aspect of the work has been a sort of form of electrical wildlife recording or something like that, as opposed to sort of musical composition. And fortunately, I've been able to get other people to sort of remix the sounds and stuff like that and sort of build them up into more musical structures. So there's sort of one group of records that I've put out that are sort of pretty much wildlife recordings, mm-hmm. and another group that are musical compositions that have been put together by other people.
Right. I mean, you'd expect, I mean, this is a very relatively technical area of interest.
Yeah.
You know, and on your sleeves, you've got lists of kind of slightly scary sounding kit. Do you use a lot of very expensive equipment?
No, not
at all. How specialised
is this? It's very specialised, but often it's very cheap, this equipment. It's not really technically too complex. It's really a case of the complexity lies in finding out about the material, gaining some kind of understanding of how to do it and what it is and what it represents. And so you sort of build up a picture of the sort of artistic potential of the material on the basis of its sort of intrinsic imagery, like, for instance, the connection between electrical storms and various types of sort of anthropological beliefs about religion and things like that.
Right.
It was a very potent area for artistic exploitation.
So, I mean, if somebody watching it at home wanted to listen to storms or to sunspots, one of these things, what's the cheapest way that they could, or the easiest way they could manage to
Well, generally speaking, most of these effects manifest on AM radio as opposed to FM. FM was invented to suppress interference, and further than that, digital broadcast TV and radio have been invented to completely eliminate interference.
Right.
They no doubt they'll generate new forms of interference of their own sporadically.
So you could tune in an AM radio, just a normal receiver.
It's a case of normally if you hear a sort of hiss or a crackle or something like that on the radio, you just kind of retune the radio a bit so that you can hear the music more cleanly. But it's a case of finding a quiet frequency, say, during a lightning storm or something like that, and listening to the effects that it produces.
That's artist Joe Banks and his Disinformation Radio Installation Project. In another interview, he compares the audio field recordings he does with searching for radio noises to what Link Wray did with his song Rumble, where he famously broke his amp to get the right sound. To Australia. Alan Lamb made these famous recordings of electrical wires. He calls it Last Anzac. It was in Helena magazine in the mid-90s.
like this.
Well, don't ask me, I'll never tell. I threw the wishes as well. Don't ask me, I'll never tell. I threw the wishes as well. Don't ask me, I'll never tell. I threw the wishes as well. Don't ask me, I'll never tell. I threw the wishes as well.